Hey guys, welcome back. BDC Care here. We're back with our weekly Q&A podcast video thing. Mm-hmm. You're probably on YouTube because most people are, but links in the description if you want to listen to this as a podcast. And I guess if somehow you've discovered us just through podcasts, we are BDC Care Gaming on YouTube. Right. And speaking of podcasts, I want to start out quickly by giving a shout out. Artist I am a fan of, and also dude I am a friend of, Bug Hunter, has just released his first episode of a podcast called Jam Mechanics, which is him and Matt from the Narcissist Cookbook, Bug from Bug Hunter, and they get together, they each give each other a song challenge, they take 3 hours and go away, and then they come back with a song demo. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to the first episode, which is out now, and it's really good. It's like surprisingly good. It's cool, and it's a little sort of funny and entertaining. It's like a sort of a light, like 30, 36 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think the first episode 36, every other one's supposed to be 30. And it's really cool kind of seeing a song come together from an idea to a complete product in like 3 hours. And obviously right. It's a demo, it's not fully produced or whatever, but it's a really good time. It's a lot of fun.
Right.
So if you like podcasts and not specifically Injustice stuff, I think it's definitely worth a listen. Right. I found it super enjoyable for what I've heard so far.
And speaking of enjoyable,
yeah,
we just literally finished watching an episode of Taskmaster.
Yeah, it's season 16, I think.
16.
Yeah.
So I don't want to oversell it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as that game show style goes, yeah, where you have celebrities playing games, competing, and there's air quotes around competing because
yeah,
the prize is a bust of Greg Davies' head.
It's like a gold-painted, like, plaster cast that yeah, barely looks like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is really funny in surprising ways.
Yeah. It's like a little absurd, it's a little weird and offbeat, but it's really well executed. I think for the type of show it is, it's definitely my favorite like reality challenge show by a mile, right?
And I rarely laugh out loud.
Yeah.
But this last episode, I mean the 16th season,
yeah,
we all three of us were watching it, and I think there was two moments where we were all laughing, not only out loud,
yeah,
but I feel like uncontrollably, like I felt like I'd lost control yeah, of my senses.
We all burst out laughing at the exact same time. Yeah. Like a beat happened and we just needed like half a second to process it, and then we all started laughing at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's not even just somebody said something so funny that we had to laugh. There was a moment where it was like so just like weird and cool. It's season 16, episode 3. So obviously your mileage may vary, but I know a lot of people discovered it. And the really cool thing about it is that most of the seasons are up in their entirety on YouTube.
Right.
So season 16, you can either, if you're in the UK, I think you can watch yeah, it on BBC 4?
Channel 4.
Channel 4?
I think BBC is something separate. I think Channel 4 is its own thing.
No, I think it is BBC Channel 4.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it's from back when they only had like 6 channels or whatever, right? And they were all run by the British Broadcasting Corporation. So Channel 4 was literally the fourth out of like,
oh, interesting,
like a really limited number of like channels.
I guess I never paid attention. I always just thought whenever I see the references, it's yeah, always to Channel 4.
Because they used to be on Dave for their first few seasons, which is, I think, a smaller
right,
one. But right, now they're on BBC Channel 4, which is kind of like it's a big deal. It's an upgrade. It's from like,
right,
Dave is like a kind of freemium style thing. And then BBC is like, you know, that's the big leagues, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's really funny. And it's a great show. Again, might not be for everyone, but if you like seeing sort of comedians, and if you know any British comedians, there's a pretty good chance that they've been on one of the seasons already.
All right, so this is interesting. Yeah. I think, so I just did a quick look. Channel 4 under Wikipedia says, Channel 4 is a British free-to-air public broadcast television channel owned and operated by the state-owned Channel 4 Television Corporation. It is publicly owned, but unlike the BBC,
yeah,
It receives no public funding and is funded entirely by its own commercial activities, including publicity.
But it's still called BBC Channel 4?
No, it's that people, I think, mistake it for BBC Channel 4. So it's actually unlike the BBC. So that statement tells me that
that's
they're
so
actually
weird,
distinct entities. Right. I mean, we're not, clearly we're not you know, British, but we're Canadian. I guess we're
so then is it colonized. Not is it not on channel is it, it not is on channel the BBC 4. Is it channel, it is channel 4? 4
I think BBC is actually something else.
Okay, that's so weird.
It is,
yeah,
it is its own thing.
Okay. Yeah.
So they call it Subsoil Channel 4 because BBC had, I guess, 1 and 2. Oh,
yeah. It's it began its transmission in 1982 and was established to provide a fourth television service in the United Kingdom. At the time, the only other channels were the license-funded BBC One and BBC Two and a single commercial broadcasting network, ITV. So it is not the BBC.
Right, but it was the fourth channel.
It is one of the big ones. It's one of the first four. Right. That's funny.
Right.
Okay, so I was a little bit... I was wrong, but in a weird way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Right, so we should do a little bit. I like to talk a little bit about the footage that you're watching.
Yeah.
And right now, this week, it's footage of Arkham Killer Croc. We talked a little bit about him in last week's recap when his challenge started. Challenge is still going on as we are recording this. And there are just some characters that are not very good if you want them to be the star of your team. So people ask all the time, well, which character should I promote? What should I do? And I think this is a good example, maybe, when you find a character that is not very good offensively, like, say, Arkham Killer Croc, that you might be tempted not to promote him. What's interesting, though, is the reason why he's so difficult is that when you try to make him into your damage dealer, like the main star, then there's limitations because his special 2 is so bad. Because that pause after he finishes where he's vulnerable because he's just not like the damage reduction because it's bleed damage, how vulnerable he is against a Blackest Night Flash. Like if you've got him in a Blackest Night facing a Blackest Night Flash team, I think you're pretty much toast. Although I might have footage here of one time where what you need to do is actually just use supers instead of specials at all because you're just going to be generating too much health and damage for them.
Okay.
I want to say something else about, like, there's something about, but he's a great tank though. Like if you put him on a full Arkham team, and try to make him damage dealer, he wouldn't be as good because you'd be missing out on a Hawkgirl with a quick tag in and out. And you'd be missing out on, Rebirth Raven protecting, or actually, not Rebirth Raven, Red Lantern Hal Jordan protecting with, his specials in gear shattering. So you could try to put him on an Arkham team, but it's actually not as good unless you don't make him your damage dealer.
Yeah.
And you're going to see, like, you see the footage. I mean, we're making the best of a relatively bad situation, but I think almost anybody else, this team setup with Hawkgirl and either Rebirth Raven or Red Lantern Hal Jordan, I think is the perfect showcase for almost any character. Like, you can make any character, almost any character work in that third slot, just not Arkham Killer Croc.
Okay. Very cool. So that's what you're looking at. And I want to say one more thing that is unrelated to Injustice and questions before we get started, which is our filming setup has recently changed. And it's because you have been on a bit of a spree with smart lights and smart switches.
Right. So, sorry. So they were on sale Prime Day on Amazon. And they were cheap enough that there were certain things I wanted to not necessarily automate, but just make it easier. Like there's certain things that, all right, so this is not gonna the dox us too much, but it just occurred to me now, I haven't done this, but this is the perfect example of what I want to do. There is a set of light switches by a door, and they're like one of those panels that has three switches in it, and one of them's for the washroom, one of them's for the hallway, and one of them's for the light outside. And every single time, it's even labeled now. Every single time somebody visits and they use that washroom, they turn off the outside
light. They kind of just hit all the switches at random until something happens.
Right. So I got to tell you, it's absolutely the most frustrating thing when you're outside and you're in the dark and you realize the light's not turning on.
Yeah.
So I think the perfect sort of case use of that light switch would be to program it to turn on every day at dusk so that even if somebody was messing around, it would turn on.
Well, I can think of a few things that would probably be a little more frustrating.
Well, I'm sure there are. Like, I'm just
I feel like Sisyphus has got a pretty bad gig with that, with the big boulder rolling up and down the hill and whatnot.
It's what you call hyperbole.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, of course.
And so in this room, you were alluding to that I've set up the lights. So
you put them all in red because you say that it's supposed to reduce eye strain, but I feel like I'm either in like a dark room in a movie or In like hell? Like a horror movie where there's some trying to indicate like a demonic presence, so, because like I look like red.
I've read somewhere that exposure to red light will actually improve your vision.
I've also heard, and I don't remember if it's red light or blue light, but one is supposed to make it harder for you to find veins, and one is supposed to make it harder for you to find arteries. And now I'm forgetting which one's red and which one's blue.
But there's cobalt blue is supposed to make it easier to see blood vessels.
Okay.
Cobalt blue.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so it's like weird and unsettling. Everything's monochromatic red except for the light that's spilling from the computer screen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just trying, like, it doesn't take much. So if you said something like, hey, Google, change light to white.
Yeah.
And then it does. See, you heard that sound. I mean, you don't get to see it, but you heard the sound of Google.
Or maybe not, depending on how far. But anyways, that's not, I just wanted to flag it because that was my experience while we were filming, but now it no longer is. I'm in normal white light again, so now I feel like a rube. But anyways, our first question comes from I am Aura 6933. They say, please help me. I tried resetting the Phantom Zone previous week, but I didn't get the Google Play Cloud button. And then the following question, or no. Oh,
so that's all right. So before we get to the next question, then.
Sorry.
So the key really, because there's different situations, right? Phantom Zone reset and the challenge reset, you need the Google Play Cloud button. And some people have been saying that they've run into trouble with that. So the issue is that your
account here.
Yeah, we run a tight ship here. So you're in order for the cloud save to show up, you needed to have been in Google Play the last time you had Injustice working. There have been moments in the last few years where there's an incompatibility when I think Google Play updates and Injustice does not. And yeah, until they get a bug fix out, which they usually push out, I don't know, within a 2-3 weeks, then it won't show up. And sometimes it's because when you start Injustice after having cleared app data, you need to give the app a chance to pull the Google data.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then there's no cloud. That means if, for example, if you disconnected too early, if your Google Play account wasn't associated with Injustice properly, all those things, no cloud state, no cloud button. Right now, there shouldn't be a problem. When I say it shouldn't be a problem, it's still possible, unlike some situations where you have that incompatibility and they need to push a bug fix. So right now, it should be working. You're going to have to just figure out the timing. A good example of doing it would be just to reconnect and don't shut off the internet. And as long as you do that and the cloud state shows up, I mean, it'll show up, but you'll have disconnected too late, clearly, because you're not disconnecting.
Yeah.
Then you'll know at least that part is working, and you just got to find the timing. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't show up, then it's a different problem, and then you need to figure out why your account is no longer associated with Injustice.
Yeah, so there we go. The next question, which I had mistakenly read sort of the queuing information and thought that they were linked. So this is a reply to a reply. This is Mr. Gaines 7252, and they said, I just checked and nothing on other account survivor, and I have nothing on it as never used it other than for the pack glitch. What is account bleeding? I will stay away from this just in case, and thanks for letting me know.
So this is just a good excuse every once in a while to talk about sort of general ideas that maybe aren't entirely mainstream.
Yeah.
But for, I guess, newish players. So account bleeding, the idea is, all right, so there's certain glitches that people do by quickly flipping back and forth between two accounts on the same device.
Yeah.
And they do it different times with and without internet connection.
Yeah. And I guess the whole sort of point is by swapping between different accounts, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain information that is cached and certain information that you can maybe clear or modify by swapping between accounts, right?
Yeah.
So the whole point is that you're taking, like, you're purposely trying to do an imperfect overwrite of some piece of information. Right. So when you swap back and forth, either information is cleared from one or transferred from one to the other, right? Like the whole reason why it has to, like why it works is because some information has to change somehow by those swaps. And so when you explain it sort of that way, the most basic idea, it kind of becomes more obvious that you could have an issue, which is that you are trying to change specific bits of data. mm-hmm. but you can unintentionally change other information, right? That you're not trying to change. And because clearly it's not behaving how it's supposed to, because if it was behaving how it's supposed to, the glitches wouldn't work in the first place.
Right.
You know that you're doing something that is messing with your data a little bit in a... Ideally, it's a controlled way where you know exactly what's going to change, but practically, it's a little bit uncontrolled way where you don't know exactly what's going to happen.
So the one example I saw that was sort of the perfect illustration of this was where switching between two accounts, one account had a character that was in multiplayer and the other account did not have it. But when they flipped accounts, it showed up in the other account's multiplayer team.
Yeah.
And then everything was messed up because it didn't exist on account. It wasn't the multiplayer team. When you switched the players out, eventually it meant that that character could not be added back to your account. It disappeared. And it was completely locked out, almost like you'd done the oversell glitch.
Yeah.
And reduced the number of the character down to some negative number, some non, you know, below zero number that made it impossible for the, the game ran into some sort of logical glitch.
Yeah. So we haven't had, because we've never endorsed sort of a dual account glitch, we don't get nearly as many sort of reports of stuff going wrong. Because even for glitches that are safe, you know, over the years, people have said, oh, I used this and it did something bad. It messed up my account. And oftentimes when we have a follow-up conversation, we can pinpoint exactly what the other thing that is totally unrelated to the glitch that they did that actually messed up their account. When we have a back and forth.
You can say that, though, but there have been a number of times where people have said, well, I did this glitch.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's not something that we actually, they watched some other video.
But so the point is that we've still had a non-zero number of people say, hey, I did this and it screwed up my account, even though we've only ever told people to not do it. So that shows that clearly it's messed some people up, right? We don't have sort of an exact data, but we know there's definitely a non-zero chance of it messing up your account. And it's specifically the way that it's a little bit sort of messy and uncontrolled, where all the other glitches that we talk about, we are about as confident as we can possibly be that they're not going to get you banned or not going to screw anything up. This one, you know, it seems like a lot of people do sort of similar glitches without having issues, but it's impossible for us to know, you know, how frequently you run into stuff, but we know that it does happen sometimes. So there we go. Our next question comes from David Gustafson, 6164, and they say, love these videos, just started playing Injustice again recently, and look forward to these videos every week. I was wondering what you guys thought the most fun teams were of the same character type. Red Sun, Blackest Knight, Batman Ninja, Arkham, etc., and which ones you thought were the best.
Well, I like that at least they recognize the question is actually two different things.
Yeah.
So there's fun, and then there's the best. But best is, I mean, we ran into that same discussion about the ambiguity of what best means, right?
Yeah. So for me, I think the one that I like the best, just because it was the one that I had first and was very aspirational, is the Red Sun team. And I like that as they built it out with stuff like Red Sun, Green Lantern, right? It's continued to be really good. I think there's always been a Red Sun team that was in sort of the top sort of echelon of team archetypes at every point. But I really like sort of that original Red Sun team, even though Solomon Grundy is not good on a Red Sun team at all. The Solomon Grundy, Wonder Woman, and Superman, I have a soft spot in my heart for. And then obviously, you know, with like Red Sun, Green Lantern, I think makes him really good, especially as sort of like a defense team.
So for those, I should say this for the benefit of those who don't know, when it first came out, there was a Red Sun pack that was, how
was
many?
450,000 or was it like 600,000? Something like that.
600,000 seems like a lot. I feel like it was less than that.
Whatever. But yeah, and it would come with those three Red Sun characters. And it was, I literally thought that it was a tier above gold. I thought there was bronze, silver, gold, and then a red.
Because the bosses used to be red cards, right? Instead of gold cards. So what was cool was, actually, even going back a little bit of oral history, there was a point where people could get the Red Sun pack when it was on sale.
Yeah.
They could get it cheaper than the individual sellback prices of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like that the price would have been something really ridiculously cheap, like less than 400,000 or maybe even less.
Yeah.
So, and the reason, I guess, why that's interesting is because back then, none of the other teams had that kind of synergy.
Mm-hmm. They were the OG, the first sort of built-in, codified, like explicit synergy. Right.
And so the characters you could actually get randomly in the gold pack. I think you still can, but at a very low drop rate. Mm-hmm. And if you could build up enough credits, and it was attainable, like easily, not easily, but it was well within the reach of somebody who was willing
to grind. If you're playing a good amount, every couple days you could get like a pack.
And then you'd have a full Red Sun team. And I can't tell you what it was like, because this was how good that team was before there was gear, when it was elite 5, level 40 was the maximum.
Yeah.
This was the bomb.
It could just shred through enemies. Yeah. So that is maybe the one that I think is the most fun for me.
Right.
Just because I have the best memories of it.
Right. Oh, and even before Tantu Totem.
Yeah, that's
when basic attacks were the most important, and you could get a huge amount of basic boost.
It was 75%. 25% per Red Sun
team, yeah. Character. Yeah. And then
you get power generation too.
From Wonder Woman.
45% power generation, I think. It was 15 right. each.
Right. So it was so good in so many ways, and it was not like, I mean, it feels like we've been so far, we've been way past that now with the way Gears have allowed teams to have more synergy. I mean, if you're looking at the best team, like the ones that just really shreds through everybody, I think it has to be the Flashpoint team.
That's true.
Bar none. Like, offensive potential. Arkham has the most versatility because there's just so many Arkham characters, so you can play the way you want.
Yeah.
And then there's that one Swiss knife guy, Arkham Knight Batman, who literally, as an individual character, you can play whichever one you want in any given fight just by different Wayne Tech boosts.
Yeah. And I will say, I kind of like the Blackest Knight team for their sort of conceit of being kind of like zombified and all their like necrotic and revive based stuff.
So visually, you mean like the aesthetic?
I like them both visually, but I also like how their abilities tie into sort of their aesthetic.
I
think, you know, maybe they're not necessarily the most fun to play, but I think they're maybe the most cool sort of mechanically and visually cohesive team, in my opinion. So the most fun for me is Red Sun. I think best is Flashpoint. I agree with you. And even though you didn't ask this, the third question that I'm answering is most cool, I think, is Blackest Knight, because they look interesting, even though they look a little sort of whatever, beef jerky, kind of desiccated. Right. But I like sort of the approach of trying to make all of their stuff aesthetically consistent with the mechanics. Yeah.
And I'll answer another question that wasn't asked, but the most fun universe, it's not the what I find the most fun. Like, there's no one in what do you call that, though? It is universe, right?
Alternate universe or whatever, right. Yeah,
my favorite is actually when you get somebody with an interesting or fun passive and you exploit the heck out of it and make it really, like, one team that I really enjoy playing a lot is Hawkgirl, Rebirth Raven, and Static.
Mm-hmm.
And you give Rebirth Raven all the both stun boosting gears.
Yeah.
And you stun everybody who is Static. Mm-hmm. And it is hilarious when you can tag in, you stun everybody with Static. He does hardly any damage because his special one is really weak, but it stuns every time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come in and steal their power and you just slap them around with Rebirth Raven.
So you're saying you like discovering synergies more than you like the sort of built-in codified synergies?
Yes, I do. So, and when you make them do something funny, like we've got a playlist of just that kind of stuff. The fun is when you make people do something they shouldn't. Like, we do. When Blackest Knight Martian Manhunter had that glitch where he could give millions of health to his teammates, that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. Yeah.
Then when you could make Reverse Flash disappear, Flash disappear, like that kind of stuff to me is the best. Mm-hmm. When you can make characters do the worm, like dance like the worm.
Sorry.
That's okay. When you make characters dance like the worm with Elseworld Flash's passive when it triggers, you doing all right there?
Yeah, I just have like a tickle in my throat. I don't want to keep coughing on the
podcast. Because
it feels...
Feels a little rude. All right, so we'll try to do something in the post-production to make sure that the coughs don't sound so loud.
Yeah. I really like that sort of idea of emergent gameplay, too. And it's funny, because this isn't a genre that often has it. But, like, the sort of idea of, like, immersive sims and other stuff. There's a game that actually just came out that I was following the development on Twitter for a little while.
Right.
And Mark Brown, Game Maker's Toolkit, made a video about it. And it's called Mosalina. And
Mosalina, do you say?
Yeah, it's like Mona Lisa.
Okay.
But and it's the whole point of it is it's this 2D little platformer, and it's called a hostile take on the immersive sim, where it's all these little puzzle rooms, but there's 27 total tools. Every game, like every run through, you get a pool of 9, and then every time you enter a room or like die and have to restart it, you get a random combination of 3 of those 9. So the rooms have no built-in solutions, and you're given these random weird and goofy tools, and you just have to make them work as best you can. So it's meant to be a game where all the gameplay is emergent, because there's puzzles with no specific solutions, and tools that are given to you totally randomly, and you're just supposed to, you're given like a fish and a ladder and something else, and a butterfly that lets you teleport, and they say, can you beat the level? I don't know. Try it. And then if you die, they give you 3 other random things and they say, okay, do it again.
Try it again.
Yeah. And so I think that type of gameplay is like inherently very compelling. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm surprised and a little, I don't want to say like delighted, but I guess a little delighted that Injustice as a game has that. Because it's a nice touch. And I think for the genre, it's relatively unique to have that kind of emergent gameplay, and it is because you can sort of have teams with synergies and all these gear and stuff, and whereas most fighting games don't let you do much of that at all.
Right, there's not a lot of experimentation that you can do that will give you any real results.
Well, there's not like sort of experimentation outside the game, right? There's sort of while you're playing combos and whatever, and you can find a combo that maybe the developer didn't intend, but there's a lot more sort of gameplay interactions that come with the gears and the teams and the passives.
Okay, I think that's great.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to end it off for the week. To finish up, we'd like to give a huge thank you to all the lovely folks who support us on Patreon.
And that would be Michael DeVries, Irvin Ruiz, and Hoshi127, who are supporting us on the credit level. And a bunch of names you see on our screen who were generous enough to have supported us directly at some point during the pandemic.
There we go. Thank you so much for your support. And thanks so much to all of you for watching. We'll see you next time.
Komoda.